touching on communication with coaches. And before we kind of get into the exact communication, there's just some basic concepts that you need to understand. And my hat's off to all of you that are referees, because you oversee games involving emotionally charged players, spectators, and coaches. Officiate what occurred amidst hundreds of instances involving fast-moving players in a split second and an unbiased manner according to rules as written. You're responsible for player safety. All the while, coaches, fans, and players potentially will berate you for perceived mistakes. It's not the greatest environment to step into. My hat's off to you for taking up that task. Confirmation bias. It's an interesting term, and it's an interesting concept, and it can work both ways. It can work coaches' confirmation bias. There even can be confirmation bias on the part of the referee. Hopefully that now, as we are calling the rules as written, has become less of a factor. But confirmation bias, you establish a pet theory, then try to prove yourself right, because being right feels good. So the coaches establish the theory that every referee is calling the game against them, then counts the instances which confirm this hypothesis. So that's something that you have to be aware of, that you're going to be working against when you do have conversation with coaches. There's availability bias, and that's where one tends to focus attention on the most recent outstanding events while overlooking the majority of the calls along the way. And it actually works out that coaches will, and they'll pick out these outstanding events, and they'll just harp on them. And that's something you have to deal with. They completely overlook all the good calls or all the major calls. Naturally, they are poor statisticians. It's certainly too much to ask of a coach amidst the intensity of a competitive game to objectively view referee calls and statistically analyze them. Most of the time you have a situation where the coach will say, hey, what's the deal? My team had 4 exclusive fouls, or excuse me, my team had 10 exclusive fouls, and the other team only had 4. Well, that's a statistic that is absolutely meaningless, because players dictate the number of exclusion fouls in a game. Also, the type of defenses that are being played. If one team is playing a zone defense and the other team is playing a hard press, obviously the team with the hard press is more than likely going to have more exclusion fouls. Emotions get in the way. Given the competitive nature of coaches, we expect emotions. But on the same token, emotions can be a prime source of irrationality. So just keep that in mind when you have an irate coach that's prancing up the deck. We tend to not see reality. It sure seems like our eyes capture reality, but countless studies and visual illusions, along with basic understanding of neuroscience, shows they do not necessarily see reality. So it's not just the case we're giving in to our biases and ignoring what's really happening. In many instances, we don't see what's actually happening in the first place. And I say that because a lot of times that happens with the coaches that are involved. They're way at one end of the pool. They're assuming something that happened at the other end of the pool, where you as a referee are right on top of the situation. So you have to take that in consideration when you are talking with a coach or when there's communication. Negative bias. We feel negative feelings of losses considerably more than we do positive feelings of gains. Bad calls hurt more than favorable calls. Losing hurts more than winning. And countlessly, I have, when I'm evaluating a tournament, I'll have a coach come up, and it's usually the coach that just lost the game, and they're trying to find out reasons why such and such a call was made. And again, they tend to forget the majority of the calls, but they single out one particular or two particular instances, and that's what they want to talk about. At the point of controversy during a game, who has the better chance of being correct? The expert, non-biased referee or the emotionally laden coach? I'll go with the referee every time. Can conflict be avoided? Remember, you can't misquote silence. The more you say in confrontations, the more you have a chance of risking or running into trouble. You should always answer questions, but you don't have to respond to statements. And if they come up with a statement, you can always say, "Coach, you have a question," and then start the conversation from there. You want to have a good conversational tone. Addressing upset individuals, and you want to treat them as a real person. So you want to be calm, collected, and be careful how much you say, and make sure that everything you say can be backed up by the rule book. Disagreement between coaches and officials is going to happen. It can surface in many different ways: incorrect calls, misinterpretation of the rules, inconsistent application of the rules, coaches vested interest in winning the game, or officials who proclaim unquestioned control over the game. What, as an official, can you do to change the dynamics from mistrust, frustration, and even anger when it occurs? Well, words matter. Using hostile language or expressing rationale beyond the written rules is simply asking for trouble. You want to choose your words carefully so not to put the coach on the defensive. "How can I help you, coach?" might just be the least threatening phrase to avert a hostile situation. Being a good listener. Delivery matters, too. Even the most carefully scripted delivery can elicit an unwanted response if sarcasm or unapproachable attitude is detected. Most of all, again, actively listen before you speak. Let him or her know through verbal and nonverbal cues. It's not easy when you have a job to do, positioning with your partner to cover the entire pool. Always be respectful and professional in reminding the coach when there is a proper time to discuss issues. So, you all know what impeding is in the rule book, which is an ordinary foul. Ordinary fouls are probably the most inconsistent of any during a game of any of the fouls, possibly other than a penalty foul. And the reason why they're inconsistent is because we still don't have a grasp of all the different areas and the coverage and how to call an ordinary foul and when to call an ordinary foul. The first thing that you have to remember is whether the opponent is holding the ball. Because if the opponent is holding the ball, there is no foul. The only time there could be a foul when the opponent is holding the ball is if the defender is striking or kicking. And it's a player safety issue. But a lot of times that whistle can get blown too quickly when the ball is in hand. Sometimes, and not as much nowadays as it was in the past, where the rules basically said if they still can play the ball, don't call the foul. But nowadays, it's usually too quick a whistle or a whistle that really isn't warranted. And as I wrote out, you have on the outline, and I won't go through each one of these, but basically, we just talked about striking, player safety issue, the ball in hand. But when the ball is in hand, the offensive player cannot use their other hand to push or to hold off the defense because the defense is allowed to attack at that particular point in time. And you have to keep that in mind. If the offensive player is aggressively ducking into the defender's space, it basically is going to be a no call or it's going to be an offensive call depending on the severity of that move. And of course, if they are aggressively fouling intentionally and not playing the ball, now you can move into the realm of a man or a misconduct. Part of the problem of inconsistency in calling the perimeter has to do with coverage and communication by two referees. For the perimeter referee to always be in good position to see P4 area is difficult. If it gets down to P5, then the attack referee kind of has to take over, but it has to be in coordination with the perimeter referee so that he or she can see what's going on at 2 meters and help cover there. And when that process happens, and I saw that happen this weekend when I was reviewing a game with Princeton, we had two of our better referees. They did not have voice-activated headsets, and that's exactly what happened. The attack referee took the P4 spot and called an ordinary foul there. And as he called an ordinary foul there, his partner knew instinctively to look at the center forward position, which was much closer to him than it was to the attack referee. So they switched off. But in the time that they switched off, all of a sudden P2 decides they're going to drive. And the defender uses two hands and basically blocks that drive, and that call got missed. So when you are making exchanges like that with your partner, you have to be in position so that you can see beyond the ball, beyond, you know, one or two players, and have a pretty good idea of what's going on. So the entire pool gets covered a lot better. But mistakes will happen. We all make them. Okay, the videos. As I said before, in the last conference call, a little note on this. There may be controversial calls or no calls that appear in these clips. The primary focus is to understand how situations happen, because you want a position to see full action and reaction and what techniques are utilized while attempting to gain an advantage or prevent one. And as we look at these clips, we will focus on what techniques are being used. Negative reflection on any referee is not intended during this presentation. And as I said, mistakes, whether avoidable or unavoidable, are made by the best of us, including myself. Also keep in mind the different viewing angles of the video camera and the referee. And a lot of times, people just don't understand that. If a video is taken high up in the stands, it gives you a different perspective. if the video is taken just above head level of the referee, but it's taken from mid-pool, it's a little bit different perspective than what the referee has when they're right on the goal line and they are calling something at the center forward position. And again, the referee makes decisions in a split second. As an evaluator, I can review these clips several times in slow motion, frame by frame. But the whole purpose of going through this, again, is to point out different things that can happen and will happen so that your awareness increases and you see situations a little bit differently so that the next time you're confronted with a situation, you have a better grasp and you can make a better call or a no call. So with that, let's go to number one. And again, just a reminder, and for those of you that are new, if you put your cursor on the picture, you'll see your controls will pop up on the left-hand side of the screen, start. You also see a 1/1, and that is the speed at which it's going to play. These are all in high definition. You can click on that 1/1 and it becomes 1.5 or it comes 1.25. So that's how you can view the whole thing in slow motion. To the right of that are your two arrows for forward and reverse, frame by frame. And then you see that white circle just below those controls. If you click on that and hold it down, you can move through the entire click forward and reverse at whatever speed you want and stop it wherever you want. And you also can see at the bottom of the picture that you have a timeline, and I may refer to that every once in a while. Most of these clips are no more than 15 seconds. And at the far right, you can expand to full screen, and you also have a sound button. Okay, so hopefully everybody now has a chance to go through and view this first clip. And what I tried to do is enlarge the two actions that I wanted people to see. And okay, mine just ran through the clip. Now, the reason why I put this in here, because it's a good contrast. One, the first is a no call, and it's a very good no call. And it's a very good response by the defense, getting the right hand on the left shoulder of the right-hander and putting that left hand up in the air. And because she has her hand on the ball, you can sink and put pressure on that person. And once she lets go of the ball and passes, you'll see that the defender stays off the offensive player. So a very good no call. But now you watch in contrast the second player, and she's a little bit more aggressive, and she comes in pretty hard. Now the hand is on the ball, so she's allowed to elevate herself and get up. But the problem with this is as soon as that offensive player lets go of the ball, she's now basically fouling, and that's a good time to call the ordinary foul, so the offense retains the ball. Of course, what that does is you look at the defense, and basically they want to be able to drop, and a lot of times they will foul and drop. So as a perimeter referee or even an attack referee, you want to understand what the defense is giving you. What signs are they showing? Are they showing it's going to be a no foul, I don't want to foul, and I'm going to try to show my hands as quickly as possible? Or is it going to be a hard press where they're going to get a little bit over-aggressive and really move out on that person and foul and then try to drop back or just foul and then be ready to raise havoc? Okay, clip number too. This one gets a little bit more physical. Obviously, this is a men's game at the NC2A championships against two of the top teams in the country. And we'll run it through, take a look at it. Okay, mine just ran through. Now, as I take it along and look at it a little bit slower, the first thing that I look at and see is what's the position of the center forward defender, what's the position of the center forward, where's the ball, what's the offense trying to do. I can also take a look at the defense and try to figure out how the defense is going to try to control the situation. As far as the offense is concerned, you've got a little bit of a mutual holding between the center forward and the center forward D. And what I would look for in that center forward position is, does the offensive player use an advantage on the defender to get to the ball? And apparently, it doesn't look like it. What does the center forward defender do? Well, he puts two hands up. So he's trying not to foul. Now, putting two hands up doesn't necessarily mean that you're not fouling or you're not impeding that player. If you have too much forward lean, if you are resting the arms on the shoulders of the center forward, that can be impeding when the center forward lets go of the ball. And basically, center forward goes for it. The center forward D doesn't really sink, doesn't really pull back, tries to go for the ball, doesn't get it. The center forward releases the ball, and now a drop is coming in. So the referee calls an ordinary foul to maintain the advantage of the offense because of impeding by the center forward D. And that's a good way to award an ordinary foul at the center forward position. Okay, let's go to number two. Number three, I'm sorry. Now, this one, you have a completely different perspective because of where the camera angle is. Obviously, the last video clip, the camera angle is up high looking down. And when you have that type of situation, you can see just about everything that's going on. Now, from this camera angle view, if I were to take a look at this clip and talk with the referee who made the ordinary foul call, I might have a little discussion and ask him, well, what did you see from your perspective? Because his perspective is right on top of the situation. And I have to honor that and understand that I do have a limited view of how this occurs. So let it run through. Okay, mine just ran through, so I'll take it back. And you can see that the center forward defender gets two hands up without any effect on the center forward, because the center forward probably in this situation is probably moving back into the center forward defender so that then he can move out to the ball as it arrives. And that center forward defender has got two hands up very nicely. However, on the way coming back down, you can see where, and this is right about 3 seconds, you can see where he is leaning over and kind of takes a shot at reaching for the ball. Obviously, that's an ordinary foul. It's not an exclusion foul. It's an ordinary foul, and the hand is off the ball. So there you have a good example of an ordinary foul. interestingly enough, in this offense, they were counting down on the shot clock, and that horn you heard was the shot clock going off. Okay, let's go to number four. All right, this is where you can see an example of the, and go ahead and run it through. But sometimes when you call an ordinary foul, you can be taking the advantage away from the offense. And I say that because, as mine just ran through, if you take it right towards where the whistle was blown, and this was a quick whistle, this could have been a no-call situation. And by blowing the whistle and giving the ordinary foul here, you gave that defender the opportunity to close out 2 meters or any chance of passing into 2 meters. So if you're at the 9-second mark, you can see how she dropped back to help cover 2 meters. So maybe if that referee was just a little bit more patient, maybe she would have called or had to have called an ordinary in order for the offense to maintain the ball. But by having a little bit more patience, it might have been a better situation for getting the ball into the center forward position. Okay, number five. Okay, mine just ran through. And the reason why I put this in here is you're going to see more of this two hands up and circling into technique. It's a little bit more disruptive, and if the perimeter player has to handle the ball, it's perfectly okay. And there shouldn't be any call in that situation. Of course, you can see the vulnerability of this defensive technique, in the sense that the offensive player was able to turn and go inside, and they had to make a switch on the defense. So I just put that up so you can become familiar with that. You'll probably see that a lot more. I know I've seen that a lot more this year than ever before. But remember, two hands up. If your arms are on the player and they're not holding the ball, but that's going to be impeding. If your forearms are on and you're showing just two hands, that's going to be impeding. So just keep that in the back of your mind. Okay, number six. Let that run through. I'm sorry, this one's going to be a little bit... fuzzy, and I apologize for that. It's at nighttime, the pixelation doesn't come out real well on a lot of the videos that are put on online. Okay, mine ran through. This is nice patience on the part of the referee involved here. You can see how the offensive player tried to draw an ordinary foul. Let go of the ball, moved into the defender. The referee says, I'm not going to buy that. You're just trying to invade the defender's space, and you're trying to simulate a foul situation. So he makes a no call. And that's the big point I hope you all get from that particular video. Okay, number seven. Okay, run this through. Okay, mine just ran through. The point of putting this particular clip up is, again, an ordinary foul is called in that situation when it shouldn't have been called. It should be a no call, or if you feel that the offensive player was taking advantage of and pushing too hard on a defender, turn the ball over. It's an offensive foul. Now, at one time when I was viewing this with another person, they said, well, that white team just got scored upon. Are you going to call an ordinary turnover in that situation? It's like, that's really penalizing them. And my mind is going, well, wait a minute. You call the rules as written, and now you are creating a bias in that situation. You are imposing yourself into a thought process that doesn't involve the rules as written. This particular video clip was taken quite a few years ago, and at that particular point in time, at the NCAA championships, there were a lot of quick whistles, and it was almost as though the officials were orchestrating the ball to move around the perimeter, regardless of whether there was a foul or not. They just blew the whistle quick. Okay, number 8. Right through. The reason why I put this up there, hand is on the ball, perfectly legal to knock the ball out and make the steal. And in this situation, it was nice patience on the part of the referee, perimeter referee on the other side. He allowed that to happen. And that's fine. Too many times I see referees on ordinary fouls, and this is where inconsistency comes in, that they almost automatically would blow the whistle if the defense knocks the ball out of the hand or hits the arm and the ball gets loose. Well, it's perfectly legal to do that if the hand is on the ball. What happens after that may not be legal, but most of the time it may be the opportunity for a great steal. And you don't want to take that away. Okay, number 9. We'll run it through. Okay, you had a chance to run through. You saw it in slow motion. If you were aware, you could have looked across at the referee and see what the referee's signal was. And the referee actually signaled a pull-in. But the foul that was awarded was an ordinary foul, and that's wrong. A pull-in is an exclusion foul. Now, if you go in real slow motion and take a look at the timing on this, it's actually pretty doggone good. He actually didn't do the pull-in until the ball got in the hand of the offensive player. However, in order for him to execute that technique, and if you put it at 3.7 seconds, you can see before the pass even comes over there, he's already holding onto that offensive player. He's already started making the move. So even though the timing was impeccable, the fact that he's holding prior to gives you every right to call an exclusion foul. And the one thing on the pull-in, it's harder to detect from the surface, and especially if it's quite a ways away from you, because a lot of times it may look like the offensive player ducking into the defensive player. Depends upon how good the defense is in executing that technique. And it also depends upon the response of the offensive player and how they respond to it. Because a lot of times it can look like, oh, that's a no call because the offensive player is just ducking into the defensive player's space. So I'm not going to make a call there. So it's all done underwater, granted, and it's not always easy to see. But you can see the position of the referee on the far side, and you can see it relative to the two players. And in that situation, the referee was able to see it, but instead of exclusion, just made an ordinary foul. Okay, number 10. Okay, take a look at number 10. I've got to get caught up here. Okay, the reason why I put this particular clip in, as you can see, if you stop it right around 6 seconds, when the call, the whistle was actually blown, it basically is using that left hand while the right hand is on the ball to control the defender, to create some spacing to keep that defender away so that they can be successful in moving the ball. Obviously, that's illegal. You cannot do that with the ball in hand. And we will probably talk a little bit more about this when we get on the perimeter, but I just wanted to kind of make you aware that ordinary versus a no call versus an offensive call, this would be one of those situations. Okay, let's go to number 11. And run this one through. And this is where consistency is so important in calling ordinary fouls. Whenever you're just outside 5 meter line, and remember, direct shot is outside the 5 meter line. It's not on the 5 meter line, it's outside the 5 meter line. Ordinary foul, you can take the direct shot. And what is the position that determines, or what determines what is outside the 5 meter line? Hopefully you all know the answer to that. And that is not the ball, it's the head. The head determines whether or not that player is on the line or outside the line. If they're on the line, no. If they're outside the line, okay. And as you look at this, the offensive player keeps his hand on the ball, but as soon as he feels the pressure of that defender, he lets go of the ball, and that's when the ordinary foul is called. So now he's entitled to pick it up. And the defensive player has to back off, which the defensive player has. The defensive player can have a hand up, but it has to be basically back, or and it's a nice goal scored. Okay, that was 11. And now we'll go to 12. The last clip. And click on it and look at it. Okay, as you can see towards the end, as it gets enlarged, and you just control the cursor, control the toggle, what do you see? Okay, the ball comes to the player on offense. What's our first response? Well, the defense is coming. The defense can attack at this particular point in time. So what does she do? She takes her left hand out of the water and puts it down on a defender. That in itself would be an offensive foul. Then she ducks into the defender to try to exasperate the situation to get the ordinary foul called. Basically, that's a no call, or you could call an offensive foul if you felt that that left hand coming down on the defender was enough to take an advantage of the defense at that point in time. Okay, that's the wrap. Again, if you have any questions, you can stay on the line and I'll open up, I'll unmute everybody and you can ask me, or again, you can email me at edswinpolo@charter.net, or you can text me at 205-233-1826. I appreciate your time and I hope this was helpful and look forward to our next session next Thursday night.